Welcome to the America's Quarterly Podcast. I'm Brendan O'Boyle, in for Brian Winter. Argentina's government is heading into next month's midterm elections weaker than it expected. How will this shape the country's post-COVID recovery and a possible deal with the IMF?
They had been reducing real spending, and so now the government is under a lot of pressure to spend more money, print more pesos, knowing that this will create pressure and tension in these talks with the IMF.
For much of the past 2 years, elections in Latin America and around the world have not been kind to incumbent governments who have had the misfortune of governing during a global pandemic. Next month's legislative elections in Argentina appear likely to follow this trend, at least according to a primary vote last month, which signaled that the coalition of President Alberto Fernandez was in trouble. It's not entirely surprising, after all. Fernandez's first 2 years in office have been marked by some of Latin America's toughest lockdowns, and also one of its highest COVID death rates. Not to mention annual inflation around 50% and a poverty rate over 40%. Since the primary, Fernandez has been working quickly to try to shore up his base before the November 14th vote. But will it be enough? And how might the election and the cracks in Fernandez's coalition impact Argentina's post-COVID recovery? And how might all of this affect ongoing negotiations with the IMF? To help us preview the vote 1 month out, I'm joined by journalist Carolina Millán, the Buenos Aires bureau chief for Bloomberg. Carolina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Brendan, for having me.
Carolina, I want to start just by going back to the primary election last month that I mentioned, because I think it's pretty critical to help explain some of the different measures and moves that the president has taken over the past 3 to 4 weeks. So how bad was this primary for Alberto Fernandez? And was there anything that surprised you?
Sure. This is a great place to start because Argentine primaries are a bit different from the way primaries work in a lot of places. So in Argentina, voting is mandatory for all voters, even if the party they're looking to vote for already knows who is going to be leading the ticket. So what ends up happening is that it works almost like a big dress rehearsal for the binding vote, which, like you said, is due to happen next month on November 14, and which is where voters will be choosing half of congressmen in the lower house and a third of the Senate. And so what happened leading up to the vote was that there wasn't too much information about who was going to win. Argentine pollsters already had a pretty dire experience 2 years ago for the presidential elections, where the result was a big surprise. But there was an expectation that the race would be quite close in several strongholds for the ruling coalition, including in the province of Buenos Aires, which is the largest province in the country with over 40% of the population and a historic stronghold for Peronists. So what we saw instead, and you were asking me what was the surprise, the big surprise in this vote was that the government did very poorly, not just in places where they historically have a lower footing, like the city of Buenos Aires, but also in these strongholds like the province of Buenos Aires.
And Carolina, after the results were announced, do you think that the governing coalition was on the same page about why it did so poorly?
That's a great question, because as you say, it is a coalition, and that is a very big part of the dynamic of the current government. So what we saw in the days after this vote was a political crisis that highlighted the tension between the two factions of the coalition. On one side, you have former President Cristina Fernández de Kirchner, who is now the vice president, and who was the one to actually select current President Alberto Fernández as her running mate several years ago. Her political views are aligned further to the left, and she has quite a large public backing from folks who support these more radical left views. And she suggested Alberto Fernández to run at the top of the ticket in 2019 as a way to appeal to more moderate left-wing voters. And that worked, right? They ended up winning. But the days that followed the vote showed that they had different stances on how to interpret and how to recover from that vote. And so what we saw was that several days after the result, some of the ministers that are more aligned with Christina Kirchner, they offered their resignations. And so that led to a crisis where basically the president was pressured to evaluate what kind of changes he might make to the cabinet. And it led up to Vice President Christina Kirchner, who very seldom speaks in public. She has made a big point over the last few years to really let Alberto Fernandez be the front of the government. She published a very harsh letter that basically said that the reason that the coalition had done poorly in the elections was the economic strategy.
And I want to talk about that letter, because when I saw that letter, it felt like kind of a watershed moment in Fernandez's government. Ever since he was elected with Christina as his vice president, one of the questions that many observers, investors, people abroad were asking was, you know, how much sway would she have in his government? And this letter was sort of her putting her cards on the table. But some of the moves that he made after that kind of helped answer that question. So could you talk to me a little bit about how Fernandez responded to Christina's requests?
Yeah, what you make an interesting point there as well, because what she said in the letter was that she perceived that she was giving Alberto Fernandez a lot of freedom to make these decisions on how to run the government. And that, in fact, she disagreed with a lot of the ways in which he was doing so. And she felt this need to return to basics. So we saw some of that in this cabinet reshuffling. There were a few key things that came out of it. One, of course, was that the economy minister and the production minister remained in their jobs. These are two ministers that are more aligned with Alberto Fernandez. And there was another key person that's aligned with Alberto Fernandez, the cabinet chief, Santiago Cafiero. And so he was moved to be the foreign affairs minister. And the person that replaced him as cabinet chief is a man named Juan Luis Mansur, who is the governor of the province of Tucumán. And he's perceived more as a traditional Peronist. And so he appeals also to some of these more centrist views rather than radical left. There are some of his views are more conservative, so he's more conservative on some social issues. So he's almost like an in-between figure, but he's someone that brings his own style to the government.
And then in addition to the cabinet reshuffling, you also had a pretty dramatic loosening of COVID restrictions. And you also had a number of new economic measures in the forms of welfare handouts to low-income Argentines with just weeks to go before the election. What do you think Fernandez is betting on here? And do you think it will work?
Well, this is definitely a response, and it's in line with some of the issues that Christina Kirchner was bringing to the table with her letter, right? The cash handouts are certainly looking to alleviate some of the effects of the pandemic, especially on lower income households. And yes, the fact that they're reopening the economy, allowing for foreigners to come for the first time over a year and a half, is a bet to reactivate tourism and to start bringing more money into the country. But the question remains on whether it's going to show its effects in time for the November vote, or whether it's too little too late, right? Because after all, it takes a while for the effects of these measures to really be felt in the economy.
You know, I know that Argentina is coming out of a three-year recession. It owes over $40 billion in debt to the IMF. How is the government paying for some of these measures?
That's a great question because this is another topic where Argentina is a bit different from a lot of other countries. The government is cut off from international credit, even though it restructured most of its private debt with creditors last year. But there's still very low appetite for debt from Argentina. So what happens instead is that the central bank helps meet the shortfall of dollars by creating pesos, basically printing pesos in the central bank and transferring them to the treasury. So we saw central bank financing of the government jump in September, just after the vote, to the most of any month this year. And financing of this type has increased for four straight months, as Alberto Fernandez seeks to boost spending on welfare and subsidies before the vote in November.
So today, Economy Minister Martin Guzman is actually in Washington to meet with the IMF's Kristalina Georgieva. And I'm curious about how the movements, the events of the last 3 weeks, these new economic measures could shape the negotiations over the debt that Argentina currently owes. And what role do the elections play in these ongoing negotiations?
The timing of the deal with the IMF is a really interesting issue to talk about, because actually the fact that these elections that are coming up are Congress elections definitely has an impact in how the talks will go. On one hand, the government was betting that it would gain seats, right? And the reason is that once the deal is reached, it will have to go through Congress and get Congress approval. And this means that both sides of the political aisle need to be in agreement about it. And so the elections specifically play in because the government was betting that it would gain some seats and make it easier to pass and approve a possible deal. And the IMF wasn't in a huge hurry to try to reach the deal before the elections. And so we reported earlier this year that it was very likely that negotiations would extend into early next year. And so now that it's clear that the government did not perform as well as it expected, this opens a few new problems. One of them is that the government had not been spending that much money this year. And that's, like we said earlier, one of the things that Cristina Kirchner criticized in her letter. They had been reducing real spending. And so now the government is in under a lot of pressure to spend more money, like we said, print more pesos for these government handouts, knowing that this will create pressure and tension in these talks with the IMF, as it's quite likely that the IMF will call for lower spending, whether it's not in the immediate term, but more in the medium term. But this is expected to be one of the requests. So this is something that will add noise to the talks.
And of course, anything to do with the IMF in Argentina is a lightning rod topic. So could you talk to me a little bit about what the sticking points are concerning a deal, not only between the governing Peronist coalition and the opposition, but also within the government?
There's been very little progress in these negotiations, and there is a very low amount of information about what has been happening behind closed doors. But one of the starting points for these conversations is simply for both sides to agree on certain forecasts, right? Forecasts on growth, forecasts on inflation, forecasts on spending. Like we were saying before, this is a very important piece of information for these talks to advance. And some of these are already in question. For example, the government's forecast for inflation this year was 29% for the whole year. And it's already clear that it's going to be much closer to 40 or 50%. And so what I'm trying to highlight here is that some of these challenges are even at the level of what are the base assumptions from which the two sides are starting. And even that remains unclear at this point.
And of course, Carolina, if it holds that the government loses seats in these upcoming elections, so could you just walk us through that scenario in which the opposition gains control of the Congress? What happens with these negotiations? And ultimately, how does that impact Argentina's recovery after COVID?
Even if the opposition wins more seats, there's going to have to be negotiations from both sides. What we did see leading up to the vote was that in an interview, the candidate running as national lawmaker for the country's capital, María Eugenia Vidal, who was also the former Buenos Aires province governor under the presidency of Mauricio Macri, was that she said that the opposition will be looking for the government to propose a long-term plan to stabilize its battered economy, and that a decade-long problem with the International Monetary Fund could help achieve that goal. So probably what we'll see is an opposition emboldened to make more demands to pass this piece of legislation once it's ready.
So on the topic of IMF negotiations, it does feel at times like this story is a continual story of deal making and debt, and a long-term plan does feel like it is needed. Do you think there's consensus on this, maybe on the need for a long-term kind of pact, or is that wishful thinking?
That's a good question. Certainly one of the issues that has faced Argentina is that there has been a lot of back and forth on policies. We saw that in the 90s, then in the 2000s, the last couple of years with President Mauricio Macri, and now with the presidency of Alberto Fernandez. What's difficult between the two main coalitions these days is that they have very different views of how the economy should function, right? And what I mean by this, on one hand, you have the peronists who, you know, are prone to spending a lot more on social welfare, but also have had a history that has made foreign watchers wary. At one point, you may recall that the IMF censured the Kirchner government for not being honest with their statistics and not publishing an accurate inflation rate, for example. And of course, there's an approach to close down the economy, you know, use capital controls extensively, limit imports, and take some of these more unorthodox measures to protect the economy, even if that ends up creating huge imbalances. What we saw in the administration of Mauricio Macri, who worked quite hard to overturn some of these protectionist measures, to overturn capital controls, is that, you know, that does make the country a bit more vulnerable to external shocks, which is part of one of the issues that Argentina faced. It also means that greenbacks can leave the country, which can put pressure on reserves. And so there is a fundamental question about whether Argentina should open its economy or not. And that is an area where there still isn't that much consensus. And that is an issue that the country is still grappling with.
So Carolina, you write for a publication aimed at an international audience. If you were having a conversation with an investor, someone on Wall Street, a policymaker in DC, what would you tell them about Argentina, and what would you tell them to watch to try to have a better understanding of how the rest of this government might play out?
That's a very interesting question. I would say that Argentina has a lot of industries with quite a bit of potential. And we've seen over the past few years, investors interested in certain commodities like oil and natural gas and lithium in the north of the country. And that, you know, it's worth putting in the research and figuring out if, as an investor, you are interested in really taking that risk, which includes a lot of political volatility, a lot of measures that could change drastically from one day to the next, the ability of a company to operate, to send out dividends, to comply with some things that in other countries are considered to be quite basic. So the question would be is to make a fair assessment of you know, if they're willing to take the risk, and if they're willing to especially bear the risk of having the capital potentially be stuck in Argentina in scenarios where, you know, capital controls make it quite hard to exit certain investments. So certainly for some longer term investments, that might be an equation that makes a lot of sense. But that will probably depend on what exactly people are looking at.
You know, Carolina, what amazes me, despite all these limitations, is just how much innovation there still is in Argentina. You have written about a lot of different startups that have attracted funding in recent weeks. What are some other sources of optimism that you see in the Argentine economy and society today, despite all of the challenges of COVID and polarized politics?
Yeah, there's a thriving startup ecosystem in Argentina. You've seen in the last few years a lot more fintech ventures and e-commerce ventures start popping up, starting in Argentina, and then using this almost as the breeding ground or the training ground to expand to other countries. So, for example, we saw a fintech wallet, Voila, received several investments over the last 2 years. And it's now valued at $2.5 billion after its latest funding round. And the company is operating in Argentina and Mexico at this point and growing very rapidly. We also have e-commerce startup Tienda Nube, which reached a $3 billion valuation in the last few weeks. And again, it started in Argentina and has expanded to Brazil and Colombia already and is looking to launch in Chile and Peru. We also saw satellite company Satellogic, which has Argentine founders, was acquired by a Cantor Fitzgerald blank check company. So I would say that what we see is a lot of these issues that make it hard to do business in Argentina have also led to a lot of resiliency and a lot of creative solutions, whether it is on the fintech side of things, on e-commerce, or on other crypto-related startups, for example, we've been seeing more of. So overall, there is, a thriving ecosystem and you know, a lot of these industries that are creating a lot of jobs and opportunities for folks here.
There really is such a deep pool of human capital. I know a lot of us will be watching closely to see how these elections go and how the economy recovers after COVID. Carolina, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much again for having me.
Thank you for listening to the America's Quarterly podcast. You can read more at americasquarterly.org. Finally, if you enjoyed the episode, please give us a review, leave us a rating, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The America's Quarterly podcast is produced by me, Brendan O'Boyle, and Gabrielle Cohen. America's Quarterly is an independent, not-for-profit publication of the American Society and Council of the Americas.